We'd like to bring the Environment, Energy, Natural Resources Committee to order. There are lots of treats today, so folks, I don't know how much more we'll be meeting. So, and the folks, Sergeant in Arms and stuff, have been pretty understanding. So if we stretch it today a little bit, so the rest of you don't get too excited if you get caught with the donut. Representative Erdahl, we were going to do Representative Garofalo's bill, and I think he's caught in some traffic. So we'll do Representative Erdahl's bill. We'll get back on that, and we may just lay it aside for a second while Representative Garofalo does his bill, deals with the commerce issue. Representative Erdahl, are you in the room? Oh, we have no Representative Erdahl. Okay, but you know what? I think
he was here a couple minutes ago.
I know he was here, Representative Hilty. Thank you.
Are we taking public testimony?
What are we? Oh, this is on Garofalo's bill. Okay. What are we doing? Is he here? Oh, I'm sorry. I misunderstood. I'm going to move House File 1303. It's Representative Garofalo's bill. There are some folks here to testify on that bill. Why don't you come forward? I've got a Brian Peach and Ms. Rowan. It looks like you guys are here, and you can certainly testify, and we'll pretend Garofalo's sitting between you. Welcome. If you could identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Brian Peach. I'm with Ameriprise Financial. I'm here today to talk about House File 1303. Every state has a registration fee for the sale of mutual funds. Minnesota's mutual fund registration fee is greatly out of step with that of the rest of the country, and in fact puts us at one of the highest rates in the nation for this. This bill would right-size the fee and make it closer to the cost of the actual regulation. So the fee itself is passed on to the individual mutual fund shareholders, which are, as you know, are average working people saving for college, saving for retirement, saving for a rainy day like today. And this bill would put money back into their pockets. This expense that's going from the state into the state coffers now will be returned to individual mutual fund shareholders. Currently, the state collects $28 million on average per year for a service that it costs them $800,000 to regulate. This bill would move the cost that they're collecting closer to the cost of the regulation.
Ms. Rowan, please identify yourself for the record and give us your testimony.
Sure. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Robin Rowan. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Insurance and Financial Services Council. I represent Minnesota-based companies that issue mutual funds like Ameriprise, Thrivent Financial for Lutheran, Securian, ING. And I think I'll just be very brief in it. What I'll add to Mr. Peach's testimony is that Minnesota law under 16A.1285 actually requires that a fee be the right size. In other words, no more nor less than the service. And clearly here we have a case where we're collecting $28 million for a service that is only $800,000. In addition, I would add that this fee being so high disproportionately impacts Minnesota-based companies and makes our mutual funds much less competitive versus other companies' funds that don't sell to as many Minnesotans or don't have as strong a sales force here in Minnesota. So I'd be happy to answer any questions, and for Pat, I'd love your support. Thank you.
Okay. Ms. Rowan, I do want to confirm, I know it's stated here, but this does not affect the current biennium we are in, but this will have effect on future budgets, but it seems a fairness issue. How does the money travel to the general fund? Is it an automatic movement to the general fund with the excess, or how does it get to the general fund, the excess?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my understanding is it's straight to the general fund.
Thank you. Members, is there any questions on the 1303? Representative Hill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm somewhat familiar with
you want to join me? We spent a lot of time last year together.
I'm sorry, sorry, Representative Hilty.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I was just saying I was somewhat familiar with this issue.
Well, thank you, Representative Hilty. We need somebody here that is. Representative Hilty.
Well, you may not careful what you wish for. Mr. Chair, actually, in part of the budget proposal in 2009, well, there's the history that goes beyond that. Actually, the fee that could be the amount that could be collected was capped at $25 million until 2007, at which time Governor Pawlenty raised the cap to raise a little bit more money without raising taxes. And then in 2009, he proposed as part of the budget solution to remove the cap entirely. I actually proposed as part of my finance bill in energy policy and finance to increase the fee. We did a lot of investigation about how this worked before we made that proposal. I would have to disagree with Mr. Peach. I think that our research 2 years ago at least discovered that the 0.1% is actually the most common fee that's charged across the country. So we were kind of at that point right in the middle of that. The testimony was that this fee is somehow burdensome on investors and that it would be returned to those investors. When we investigated this before, we discovered that actually there is no mechanism for returning the fee to investors, and it's very doubtful that that would actually happen. The fee does not show up anywhere on a bill. It's just rolled together with other fees. Do Minnesota investors pay more or less in other states, or do are those charges different because of that? The fact is that banks and other companies do not separate out this fee state to state. All customers nationwide pay the company an equal rate. And then the company meets out payments to the various states. As far as we could find, the percentage of this fee that's paid by companies headquartered in Minnesota versus companies headquartered on Wall Street suggests that the great percentage of the fees that are collected in Minnesota come from out-of-state companies. As far as we could discover 2 years ago, Ameriprise was the company that was most affected in Minnesota, and they paid roughly $500,000 of that $25 million that was generated. Mr. Chair, I find it very difficult to see this bill as anything other than a way to enhance the bonuses of Wall Street bankers. This money is not, there's no mechanism, there's no way that if this fee is reduced that either the fees charged by the brokers is going to be reduced or that the money is going to be returned to the investors. Mr. Chair, that we did do a little research on how this would affect an individual investor. The typical fee is about 5%. If an investor, say, invested $10,000 over the life of that investment, if it went for several years, the brokerage fee would be about $550. Of that, this fee that we're talking about, the registration fee, would be $5. I think it's very difficult to see this proposal as anything other than putting money on the bottom line of the company. I think it's disingenuous to represent that this is somehow going to redound to the benefit of investors or that this money is going to be returned to them. If you're tired of big bonuses going to people that have been responsible for a lot of our problems, I would suggest voting against this bill. For members' information, Mr. Caracciolo, the CEO of Ameriprise, in 2010 had a total compensation of $10,224,454. Oh, I'm sorry, that was 2009, not 2010. I don't think that Mr. Caracciolo needs an additional couple million dollars on his bottom line, or the $500,000 that we're talking about that would go to Ameriprise. Mr. Chair, this just goes against everything that I hope some of our members, at least, have been disgusted by in the last couple of years, with enormous bonuses going to CEOs of companies that have been largely responsible for the fix that we're in.
Ms. Rowan or Mr.
Chair,
did
you intend to vote on this bill in the absence of the author? Or?
The author is, I believe, pulling into the parking ramp right now. I believe that we will not vote on this bill unless the author is in the room. Representative Hilty.
Well, Mr. Chair, whenever we do vote on this bill, I would ask for a roll call.
Okay, roll call has been requested. There will be a roll call. Mr. Peach or Ms. Rowan, can you speak to where the reduction in the fee, how it is? Is it on the mutual fund statement? Who pays it? What happens to it?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'd be happy to explain. Mutual funds are independent legal entities that have an independent board of directors. They contract with a mutual fund service providing company such as Ameriprise Financial, and they negotiate in contract which fees are going to be assessed for every type of mutual fund that is created and every type of mutual fund is sold. It's part of the agreement with the independent board. The idea that this fee is collected by us and may or may not be passed on is simply incorrect. The fee, we can only pass on the cost of the fee. We can't mark it up. It's not like we can add shipping and handling to a mail order. Whatever the fee is assessed by the state, that's the fee we pass on. Saying that there's no mechanism to assure that it's not going to be passed on will be similar to saying, if you lower income tax in Minnesota, how can you be sure that that savings is going to be passed on to the individual taxpayers? It simply is by the fact that it's not collected. So that's not true, that there's no mechanism for keeping it. We would not be able to keep it. It is simply passed on to the individual retail shareholder of our mutual fund. One other point I would like to clarify. There seems to be a red herring with the 1/10th and 1/20th of 1%. There are a number of states that cap their fees at 1/20th or 1/10th of a percent, but they also have caps on the overall amount collected. The states that collect the majority of fees have $1,500 to $1,200 caps on what they can collect per year. Minnesota has no cap. There are states where we pay $50,000 in registration fees, such as Minnesota, for one class of funds, that registering the same fund in North Dakota would be $800. Registering it in Delaware would be $1,500. So you can look at the fractions all you want, but when at the end of the day, when there's no cap and you can keep taking that fraction for every sale, it still puts us out of whack. It puts the Minnesota shareholders at a disadvantage for that. And just from a little bit of historical perspective, there was a cap on this that was put in place and was removed by Governor Pawlenty. That was removed at the request of the Commerce Department because the Commerce Department believed that it costs more money and more work for their burdened staff to administer a cap and refund program than to simply eliminate the cap. So that was removed at the request of Commerce from an efficiency perspective. So, and it is true, this fee gets passed on to individual investors, and you can look at it and say, oh, it's a little bit here, it's a little bit there. At the end of the day, it's $28 million. It's not going into the pocketbooks of Americans, middle-class people that are buying mutual funds. These are individual mutual fund shareholders. These aren't typically really wealthy people. They buy stocks, they buy hedge funds. Mutual fund individuals on average do not have a college education. They're solid middle-class people. They have less than $100,000 invested in mutual funds for their retirement, for their kids' education, and for their rainy days. These are the people that work hard every day. These are the people that are trying to have the American dream, and we're taking $28 million out of their pockets just to put it into the general fund. That's not right. I don't keep this. Ameriprise doesn't keep a penny of this. It's passed through to the individual investors. So this has no impact on our company's bottom line, on our executive compensation. It does have an impact, however, on our mutual fund sales force and our mutual fund shareholders, because every penny of expense that goes into a mutual fund reduces the average rate of return. So when you look at a Forbes magazine or a Fortune or Money magazine and they rank mutual funds by the highest rates of return, it's really competitive. Being up one rank above someone else drives a lot of sales and a lot of investor confidence. When you put more expenses into our funds, you're driving our returns down, and that hurts us competitively. It hurts our people in Minnesota who are making a living helping their customers and their friends save for retirement and education. So this does have a big impact on people. It's not just a simple pass.
Thank you. Representative Hilty.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Peach, is the fee collected in South Dakota different than the fee collected in Minnesota?
Yes, it varies by state.
Representative Hilty.
Yeah, Mr. Peach, is the difference $5 on a $10,000 investment?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hilty, I have not collected what it is on a $5,000 investment and calculated. I would not be able to answer that.
Representative Hilty.
Mr. Chair, the information that we collected 2 years ago, and we did have some very helpful information from one of the local institutions that was willing to discuss this with us, was that, in fact, the fees that are collected typically are the same in every state in the union. Mr. Peach has different information than that. I would really like to see that documented.
Was there a question there, Representative Hilty, a comment?
It was just an observation based on the research that we have done.
Members, there is a fiscal note on this bill. Paige is getting it copied. We will not vote on it until you see the fiscal note. Welcome, Representative Garofalo. Representative Garofalo, I would like to move, and we have not talked, Representative Garofalo, and I did not get a chance to talk with Representative Hilty. This is a big impact. There's definitely a difference of opinion on this bill between Mr. Peach and Representative Hilty. Representative Garofalo, I usually like to let people know about this. Representative Garofalo, I'm going to move your bill without recommendation to Ways and Means, and then because this has significant issues. Members, that means that we will be voting to move the bill. You'll be voting yes or no to move the bill without the recommendation of this committee, is my motion at this time. It does move the bill to Ways and Means, and they can pass it or not pass it or whatever. But it means that we are moving it without recommendation because of the differences here in the discussion. Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And first of all, let me apologize for the South Metro road construction situation and my promptness or lack thereof of the committee. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, just to be clear, one of the primary reasons why I'm authoring this bill is because absent legislative action, I don't believe this revenue is going to be coming into the general fund next year. That's one of the primary reasons why I'm authoring this. And the reality is, when we look at statute and we talk about what the appropriate level of fees are, for the services that are being rendered, you look at other states, the legislature can deal with this one of two ways. We can pass statute, we can control what the revenue stream is going to be in the future, in future bienniums and future fiscal years, or we can have the people on the other side of this issue take this to court and litigate it, and we're going to lose. So either way, we're not going to get the revenue stream. That's one of the reasons why I'm bringing this this bill forward. And just to be candid with you, Mr. Chairman and members, I'm speaking on behalf of myself here. I'm not speaking on behalf of the industry or otherwise. I think there was a willingness and a tolerance on behalf of those industries to be overpaying this fee historically. But last year, when the legislature passed an increase in this, they freaked the industry out, and they provided a financial incentive to litigate this. So, Mr. Chairman, that's why I'm bringing this forward. In terms of your concerns about the general fund or members of this committee, those revenues aren't going to be there either way, Mr. Chairman. It's going to be a matter of whether the legislature deals with it or whether the courts are going to, whether we're going to lose a case in court.
Questions for Representative Grapple. Representative Hilty.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First of all, Representative Garofalo, the legislature did not pass this bill in the last session.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hilty,
Representative Garofalo,
the bill to which
passed
you referred.
Passed a substantial increase in this fee last session.
Representative Hilty. Representative Garofalo, Representative Hilty's got the floor. Representative Hilty.
An increase was proposed. It did not pass.
Mr. Chairman,
Representative Grapple.
Chairman, Representative Hilty, it was part of the conference report that was sent. The governor insisted on having it be removed from the conference report. The passage by the House of Representatives and the Senate of the increase in this fee is what, in my opinion, I'm not speaking on behalf of the industry. I'm telling you, I'm someone who was on the conference committee, that it freaked them out. You provided a financial incentive, whether it was intended or otherwise, to no longer ignore the overpaying of this fee.
Representative Hilty.
Well, Mr. Chair, I think in that regard, there was little expectation that, in fact, that would pass. I think that it was my intention at the time to kind of, within the purview of my committee, it was my intention to kind of suggest that money that existed in various forms was being ignored. That we were hearing then, as we hear now, that we don't have any money. Nobody has any money. There is no possible source of additional revenue without just totally destroying jobs or somebody's market. Mr. Chair, when we did the research on this subject, we discovered that, first of all, this has virtually no impact, and in spite of the testimony that we have heard, we could not discover any evidence anywhere that this fee had any significant impact or that there was even a mechanism for returning it. Or that there was any suggestion that fees in the $500 range or greater would be reduced as a result of this fee being increased or decreased. In fact, we had information from at least one bank that's involved in these transactions that said, no, that would not happen. So, Mr. Chair, I think that the sky is not falling. Nobody's proposing to change this fee at this time to increase it. I don't think that that's likely to happen, and the foreseeable future, but I don't think either that this is a time to cause such a hit to the general fund because of unfounded fears about what might happen in the future.
Thank you, Representative Grapple.
Well, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, again, I guess if I could introduce a bill to build a time machine and go back in time and have Representative Hilty make that case when he was chairman of the committee, not introduce the bill, I mean, I wish I could, but I can't do that. And Mr. Chairman and members, I mean, the reality is if you look at 16A.1285, I mean, it's pretty explicit. It says, unless otherwise provided by law, specific charges falling within definitions must set at a level that neither significantly over-recovers nor under-recovers costs, including overhead costs involved in providing the services. Now, I was late to the committee, but I can't imagine that anyone has submitted testimony suggesting that this fee structure is meeting the level of costs. It's coming in over it. So if this is litigated, we are going to lose. And in terms of its effect and what's going on, now we're talking about taxes on savings and investment by middle-class investors. And this is right up on a bipartisan nationwide basis exactly where the movement is on reducing taxes on savings and investment, not on raising them. And again, in terms of its impact on the general fund, this money's not going to be there. We can either plan for it or we can have it imposed on us.
Thank you, Representative Grapple. Is there anybody in the audience that wants to speak for or against the bill? Is there anybody in the audience from, I'm sorry, is there anybody in the audience from the Department of Commerce? So this bill has a $40 million impact in the 14-15 biennium. It's been posted for 2 days and nobody from the Department of Commerce is here. Representative Wagenius.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Grapple, I'd just like to comment on your assumption that a lawsuit would happen, number one, and number two, that it would be successful. Both are speculation, and in law, the specific always overrules the general. That's in Chapter 645.
Representative Wagenius, can you use the mic? I can't hear you. I'm sorry.
Representative Wagenius.
I simply wanted to say, Mr. Chair, Representative Grapple, that speculating on the a lawsuit or the outcome of a lawsuit is, particularly in this case, just not a good argument. And it's not reality. For one thing, in a lawsuit, I'm sure someone would argue that the specific law overrules the general law. That's our normal interpretation of statutes. It's found in Chapter 645.
Representative Grapple.
Mr. Chairman, my apologies, Mr.
All right,
Chairman.
Representative Grapple.
Representative Wagenius. You know, I would just say that I think that it is an entirely appropriate discussion to have within the context of a bill. And my recollection is last night you actually brought up the cost of litigation in regards to another bill. And it didn't stop you from speculating on the cost of litigation on a bill that was before the Ways and Means Committee last evening.
Representative Wagenius.
That's true. Mr. Chairman, should we talk about that one? Very different.
I don't think we want to have a gay marriage discussion today, Mr. Chairman.
Well, that's the subject you brought up.
Members, I see no other discussion. I'll renew my motion that House File 1303 be moved to the Ways and Means Committee without recommendation. Clerk, call the roll.
McNamara?
Aye.
Anderson?
Aye.
Beard? Dill?
Aye.
Well, excuse me. We're going to stop in the middle of the roll call. Representative Dill, you raised your hand. We're going to stop right here. Representative Dill.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and for Representative Grapple.
Can you put your mic down, Representative Dill?
For Representative Grapple, or the testifier. Are these fees listed in the prospectus? I believe they're 401B, 403B1 fees. Are they listed by state so that if you had a mutual fund where many people from many states are buying them, are they listed by state so that they're disclosed to the investor? And second part of my question is, can an investor in Minnesota avoid the fees by opening accounts in other states and investing at that location? For example, if I had a seasonal home in Florida, would I be able to avoid the fee by doing that?
Members,
buying
just
at the Ameriprise at a Florida location.
Just for informational purposes, we will just restart the roll call after Representative Dill's questions are done. Representative Garofalo.
Mr. Chair, Representative Dill, it is my understanding that the fees are not detailed in each prospectus on a state-by-state basis. Fees are collected for each fund and then divided by the shareholders of that fund. So, and there are funds that primarily only Minnesotans buy. So if you're living in Minnesota, you bear a disproportionate impact from those fees. We pool all of the expenses for a fund and divide it out on a prorated basis.
Representative Dill.
And then it's just the last question. The second question was, can they avoid them? And let's see, my third question was, I had it, maybe while you're giving that answer, I can think of what it was.
Mr. Peach.
Mr. Chair, Representative Dill. You could avoid fees that would be assessed in Minnesota if you bought a state fund in another state. For example, if you live in Florida and you buy the Florida Municipal Bond Fund, that would not likely to have any fees from Minnesota in it. So there would be circumstances where you could arrange your personal finances to do that. It would be unlikely from a broad-based perspective.
Representative Dill.
And the last question is, for the purposes of competitiveness, mm-hmm. mutual fund investing and mutual fund offerings are really competitive. And is it possible that a fee would, because Minnesota's fee was higher, that they might absorb the underwriter or the fee sponsor might absorb the Minnesota fee so that they're competitive with other investments? And so in actuality, you don't actually have the fee because they absorb it as a part of the cost of doing business rather than offering it and passing it along to the investor.
Mr. Peach.
Mr. Chair, Representative Dill. There certainly could be circumstances where companies do that. It's individually negotiated. It would be unlikely that that sort of expense would be absorbed. And what does happen, though, that companies like mine that are homegrown, that started here in 1894, that have invested heavily in Minnesota because that's our home, that's where our sales force tends to grow, we have a disproportionate number of financial advisors in Minnesota. We have a disproportionate number of clients in Minnesota. So because of that, we sell more here than we do in a lot of other states. And because the fees are higher, that breaks our return down on our mutual funds because we have a bigger base in Minnesota. And it's a contractual obligation with our mutual fund. It's independent on which the fee is being passed through.
Representative Dill.
Well, Mr. Chair, I'm going to change my vote to pass.
Representative Dill, we're going to re-vote from the beginning, so you'll have an opportunity.
Well, I really wanted to say the reason I'm changing to pass when we re-vote is because I'm just not sure I have enough information. I do this on a regular basis, but, I mean, the type of investing we're talking about, and I'm just not sure I have enough information at this time.
Representative Falk had a question. Representative Falk.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I remember hearing part of this discussion previously when the bill pertaining to this issue was brought up last year, but I'm curious because it seems like this issue has the potential to have a negative impact on the company if this were to move forward, but I want to know if the Ameriprise, they're at the table, if they have more customers today than they did when potentially allowing this fee to increase was proposed, or if we're allowing it to be uncapped, do they have more customers today than when that occurred?
Mr. Peach.
Mr. Chair, Representative, our customer base is relatively the same over the last couple of years. It probably has gone up a little bit and down a little bit over time, as any major company does. But
can you more directly answer Representative Paul's
I don't know
question.
The exact number of customers that we had on the date that this was proposed last year versus the date today.
Representative Paul.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess the other question is, if this negatively impacts the relative performance of mutual funds, investors are more likely to look disfavorably upon a company that essentially has higher ones, so they would be less likely to invest in that company. But has Ameriprise done well? Has profitability gone up over the last couple years? I'm curious, is that the case?
Mr. Peach.
Mr. Chair, Representative, The profitability and performance of Ameriprise is separate from the performance of individual mutual funds. The shareholders buy our mutual funds based on the ranking performance for that body of assets and that fund product. So that there's really no correlation between that and why people invest in it and our overall profitability of our company.
Mr. Peach, I'm going to ask Representative Falk to ask his question maybe in a simpler way so that you can answer it. Okay. Representative Falk, will you repeat your question, maybe simplify it?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question is that if these fees are higher, the relative performance is lower, people probably shouldn't be investing in the company. But I just, looking at your stock price over the last couple of years, looking at your reports and seeing the profitability has gone up for the company, you have to make some form of profit selling mutual funds or else you wouldn't be in that business. And so apparently more people are paying into your funds or the performance has gone up, so more people want to invest in them, irrespective of this. And so I'm just trying to figure out what's the story, because obviously if this was a real deal breaker, people would not give their money, their hard-earned money, to your company. They would entrust it to somebody else who is more competent. But given that your performance is quite good, they trust you, they feel the company's competent, so they want to invest there. And so I just don't think that I don't see the connection between this fee and being the downfall to Ameriprise or the part that's going to hurt relative performance enough that it scares away people from investing with your company.
I think the question got more complicated.
Mr. Chair, Representative, again, we're really talking about two separate things. Ameriprise Financial is a multinational company that has a variety of income streams. Selling mutual funds is not our only business. And when you're looking at the performance of our overall stock, that's entirely separate from the mutual fund rankings that come out and are published everywhere. When someone's going to buy a mutual fund, they look at the performance of the individual mutual fund, because that has no relationship to the individual company's stock. So if you're buying our New Dimensions fund, how that performs is totally independent of how Ameriprise Financial as a whole performs. And when the companies are ranked in the financial publications, they're ranked purely based on the mutual fund performance and mutual fund fees that are assessed, and people do pay attention to where someone is at in the rankings. I think it's difficult when it's hard to subjectively evaluate the quality of a product. People look at other sources that rank them. People look at trusted advisors like Money Magazine or Fortune to see which firms are returning the highest dollar amount, the highest percentage, and that makes the difference in influencing any individual's perception.
Representative Falk.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think I misheard you, but did you say that when people buy these mutual funds, it has no effect on the company's performance? So the company does not earn any type of return? So if I go and buy, like you say, the Premier Fund or whichever fund offered by Ameriprise, it does not contribute at all to Ameriprise's bottom line?
Representative Falk, he actually said that the company's profitability doesn't roll with the profitability of the individual mutual funds. I would disagree with his statement to that point, that the company's profitability is probably better, as the company itself is, if their mutual funds are doing terrific. And I was surprised to hear that. I don't think he said it doesn't. That was, if I remember right, that's what Mr. Peach said, and I don't necessarily agree with that. Representative Falk, we're getting close.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's, I mean, one of the things that I'm trying to understand here, because if the company is doing well and people appreciate the way that the money is managed, they're going to see the relative performance, and that's going to contribute to high returns for the mutual funds, but it's also going to contribute to high returns for the company. So if you're doing well, more people are going to invest in your company. Isn't that just simple logic?
Works that way in the landscape business, Representative Falk.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I don't own a mutual fund company, though I do own a couple of mutual funds, and
Are you investing with a good Minnesota company, Mr. Chairman?
Members, I see no more discussion. We're going to go back to the roll call vote. Clerk will call the roll from the beginning.
McNamara?
Aye.
Anderson?
Aye.
Beard? Dill?
Yeah.
Druskowski?
Aye.
Fabian?
Aye.
Falk?
No.
Hackbarth?
Aye.
Hancock?
Aye.
Hansen?
No.
Hilty?
No.
Knuth?
No.
Purcell?
No.
Quam?
Aye.
Scott?
Aye.
Torkelson?
Aye.
Wagenius?
No.
There being nine ayes and six nays. The bill is sent to Ways and Means without recommendation.
Thank you, Mr.
Members, we're back to Representative Erdahl. Representative Erdahl, I see you in the hallway. The door open. Members, we will bring back. I will bring back House File 1061. Members, I'm going to change my motion. It won't be without recommendation. It will be. It won't be that, members. It will be. We need to have you go to taxes. I understand. Representative Wagenius asked a question about the whole PILT discussion and that issue, and talking with the tax committee, they do want to see the bill. So my recommendation would be that the bill pass here and be sent to taxes. Representative Erdahl, back on your bill. Members, we're going to make our best effort to work through this by 10 o'clock, because after that, we are moving to a broom closet to finish. So Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, I think we should just continue right on. We have where we were with amendments, if that's
okay. Thank you. Representative Erdahl, first we're going to do the A36 amendment. I believe it's Representative Torkelson's amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The A36 actually reflects language that was in last year's bill. I would like to make an oral amendment to the amendment on line 1.4. After the word receive, insert the two words up to. So that would read, which shall receive up to 2.5%.
Ms. Taylor, do you have the oral amendment to the A36?
I do not.
Okay. Questions to the A36 as orally amended? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. The amendment's adopted. Next, members, will. I'm sorry. Oh, we adopted the oral amendment. I'm sorry. Now to the A36 amendment. Discussion. All those in favor of the A36? Representative Erdahl, you support the A36?
Yes, I do.
Thank you. Well, it's hard to eat and do this at the same time. I apologize, members. To the A36, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. The amendment's adopted. Next, we'll take up the A39. That's my amendment. This deals with the DNR commissioner and the sign-off of acquisitions with other than it would deal with the nonprofit organizations. Discussion to the A39. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I believe this provision was in the last two bills. I think it's an accountability provision. I would oppose the provision and ask for a roll call. I think particularly when there's concerns about acquisitions, to have somebody accountable who is signing off is important. And I believe the department, if the department is here, Mr. Meyer yesterday told me the department did not support this amendment. I do not see anyone.
Members, we're going to hold on. We're going to lay the A39 over until we need. We're not going to do any more of this stuff without the department, Representative Hansen. We'll lay the A39 over until we, so that we can keep moving ahead to get the department. And then if there's any other people in the audience that want to speak for or against the A39, we'll wait until we have more folks here. Next, I think we have the A46. It's Representative Hancock's amendment. Representative Hancock to the A46.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. What this does, it involves the proposed Lake LaSalle Recreation Area, and there is a resort on the one end of the lake. And what this does is it authorizes the DNR to, by next March, submit a report to us on how to manage this resort with a couple of options. The one option would be to a long-term lease to a non-state ownership entity to manage the resort under certain restrictions, and then the option also possibly for a permanent conservation easement on the resort and selling it to a non-state entity. In that report that they are to submit, if the options included to basically to lease this management of this, that it would include the amount of money equivalent to local taxes or payments in lieu of taxes, to where this would be the responsibility of the non-state entity.
Questions to the 846. Representative Wagenius.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. There's really two pieces of this amendment, and one piece seems reasonable to look at options for management, but the other piece of having the state get in the business of land speculation does not seem reasonable to me. If people want to do land speculation, they should be doing it on their own. So what I would suggest is on line 1.9, and I will move it, on 1.9, put a period after entity. Get rid of that line, the next line, and on 1.11, put a period after resort and put a capital T. So the land speculation part would be gone, but the options for management would remain.
Ms. Taylor, do you have the amendment, and if you could read it back?
Mr. Chair, members, if I'm understanding the amendment correctly, on line 1.9, after entity, insert a period and delete everything after entity. And then line 1.10, delete easement on the resort and selling it to a non-state entity. And then on line 1.11, after resort, insert a period and capitalize the T in the.
Representative Wagenius, is that the gist of your oral amendment?
Yes, it is.
Representative Wagenius, if it's all right, I see the Parks Division is here. Mr. Bowl, could I ask you to come down to speak to Representative Hancock's amendment? If you could identify yourself for the record.
Good morning. Forrest Bowe, Deputy Director of the Parks and Trails Division.
Director Bowe, is it my understanding that the LaSalle Lake, we are putting together three different pots of money for this potential purchase, Outdoor Heritage money, LCCMR money, and here in Representative Erdahl's legacy bill, some Parks and Trails money. And am I correct in understanding that the current owner is not interested in selling less than the entire parcel?
That is correct, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Director Bowl. Representative Wagenius, that is, I think, the gist of where Representative Hancock is coming from, is we want to just have all our options to look at. There's not an opportunity to not buy just this parcel. We need to buy it all as one, and this allows the DNR to look at all their different options. Could they buy the whole thing in these three different pots and then potentially in my case it would be one of the least, probably the least desirable to do what you don't want, and that would be to sell it. But I think we need to come in with an open mind and look at what are all the options. The state can run it as a conventional state rec area or adopted as a state park, and it would be one more state park, or they could lease it out to an entity, to the Wagenius Resort Company or wherever that would be, or the other option would be put a conservation easement on it and sell it for it to be operated as the McNamara Resort. And those aren't good examples because neither you or I would ever be involved in that, so I shouldn't say that, but anyway. Yes, thank you, Representative Wagenius, to straighten that out. That was a very poor example. But anyway, it would be the A resort or the B resort. This is just, I think, looking to keep our options open and to ask the DNR to come back next year. This is non-binding the way I understand it, but it's something that we really feel is important. And if I'm not mistaken, it was at the request of either the nonprofits involved or the agency that asked us, they would like to look at all kinds of options, including if I understand right, we want you to look at a long-term potential lease, which would take some statutory change, I believe, because current law, I don't think Director Bowe would allow you to enter a long-term lease, which somebody in the resort business, which neither would Representative Wagenius or I are in or have a desire to be in, would probably need, if they were going to operate it for a long time, probably need a more, or operate it and try and make a business out of it, build up reputation, and those would need maybe a longer term lease. So we'd like to give the direction to the DNR that that's an option we'd like them to pursue. Representative Wagenius.
I still, Mr. Chair, believe that if we're going to purchase it, and that's fine with me, we're doing it for Minnesotans. We are not doing it for other people. Land speculation does not seem appropriate as a outcome of this purchase. Purchasing it for running it as a recreation area for Minnesotans does seem very appropriate, but as land speculation, no. And so I would, I think looking at different management options is a different thing, and we can certainly do that. So I would retain my motion that we delete three lines.
Thank you, Representative Wagenius. Representative Hansen, did you have a comment to this point? Representative Hilty to this point? Representative Anderson to this point?
Thanks, Mr. Chair. And I think maybe they, unless I heard wrong, the sentence beginning on line 110 in the proposed amendment does not make a complete sentence.
I believe you are correct, Representative Anderson, and I believe that that is being taken care of as we speak. Would you like to redo your amendment, Representative Wagenius?
I think with the amendment, maybe just council could help us out with the amendment.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members, the revised amendment would read on line 1.9, after entity, insert a period and delete everything after entity, and then delete lines 1.10, and then everything before the evaluation on line 1.11.
That's what I meant in the first place.
Is that your original intention, Representative Wagenius?
That was my original intention.
Thank you, Ms. Taylor, for that correction. Thank you, Representative Anderson, for being on the ball. Even farmers can read. Any other comments to this point? Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess, Mr. Chair, I'd like to understand this situation better, but I understand there's a resort there, and we're going to be buying the land around it. With this amendment, that would lock us into either managing the resort for Minnesotans somehow, as Representative Wagenius pointed out, or leasing a resort. Is that what that would leave us with? Somebody help me understand this a little better.
Representative Wagenius.
I think this is Representative Hancock's amendment, but we do leave the language that says evaluating options for the management of the resort within the recreation area. So it seems to me that all options are on the table there.
Representative Hancock to this amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think this is sort of a relatively new situation for a purchase of this kind. And I think what we're trying to do here, and I would like Mr. Bowe to speak to it, but I think the option that we're trying to do here is just that. What are the options that we have? And let's let our agencies determine what is the best way to proceed here. Do we want to manage it as a park, as a satellite of Itasca? Do we want to basically put the financial obligations of such onto a private entity through some term of a revised long-term lease, or is the best option in this case to sell the property? And I think the purpose of the amendment here is to have our agencies see what the best options are for going forward with this activity. And I would be interested to hear what Mr. Bowe has to say on his approach to these options.
Director Bowe.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hancock, This is a little bit different of a facility than we've had in the past. In most cases, the legislature authorizes land for a state park, authorizes or state recreation area, and then appropriates dollars for the infrastructure and those kinds of things. This particular area, about 1,000 acres in total, and what we're talking about here is about 90 acres of kind of the developed area. There is a resort. There's several cabins, kind of a caretaker's home. There's a campground with some facilities and buildings there. And so it is a little bit different. It's kind of a turnkey operation. And what we would do is through our master planning process is we could certainly do this evaluation as part of that process, and we would need to do a master plan prior to operating in any case.
Representative Purcell, to this point.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to Representative Hancock, I supported the premise here of moving forward with LaSalle Lake Recreation Area. But I do have question and don't support. I support Representative Guinea's amendment. If we're going to buy this thing, why in the world will we sell it back? That's my issue here. Let's just leave it be then and work around them in that resort. And I know the area. I know the area. I told you my kids swam in that lake, and it's colder than all get out because it's 240 foot deep. And that's part of the reason that resort there's had a hard time making it over the years. I've been going out there in that area for 30-some years, and they've had a tough time. So it's curious to me why we would even consider selling it back. To me, that's just not an option. If we're going to acquire it, let's acquire it and run it as a management area. But that's the only thing, as I understand it, that Representative Guinness is... oral amendment here is going to do is to take that language, basically take that language out about selling it back. So I support Representative Guinness's amendment here.
Thank you, Representative Purcell. Representative Hancock, to the point.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I really don't have any objections to the amendment either. I would prefer one of the other two options. If Mr. Bowe has really no objections to relinquishing that option in his master plan, then I would have no trouble supporting the amendment. But if he would like that option on there, then I think we owe it to trusting to our management team the option of that. So maybe a little more direct direction for Mr. Bowe.
Thank you, Representative Hancock. Director Bowe, is the typical that the DNR be restricted from selling property?
Mr. Chair, it would not be typical for restrictions on selling property. However, every time we would sell property, we would come back to the legislature and get approval to do so.
Thank you, Director Bull. To this point, Representative Draskowski, I believe you're first.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, I would speak against the amendment to this amendment. I think this is a report back to us. I don't see any reason. It wouldn't cost any more. I don't understand that it would cost any more to have the agency consider these other options in their report. The more information we have with the more options for this land, the better. I think it would be short-sighted to take this part out of the amendment.
Thank you, Representative Draskowski. Representative Fabian.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I was Representative Draskowski just brought up the point that I want. I just wanted to be clear that, in essence, what we're doing here is we're authorizing the commissioner and the department to simply do a report and come back to us with the options that are available to them or their recommendations. And the options that are available to them to use are the options that are spelled out here in the amendment as Representative Hancock has presented it. Is that correct?
Well, thank you, Representative Fabian. I think it is, but upon further clarification, they have the opportunity to come back to recommend to sell any piece of land. So I think we're fine to take Representative Wagenius's amendment. It doesn't sound like it makes any difference. So I guess I'd like to keep moving. Representative Wagenius has moved an oral amendment, and Representative Hancock is the author of the amendment, and it sounds like the DNR is saying they still have the options that Representative Drazkowski talked about, whether the amendment is in or not. So all those in favor, Representative Hancock, further testimony?
I guess in conjunction with that comment, I would include it as a friendly amendment, and we'll adopt it as such. Do it that way. Or should we vote on the amendment?
No, I believe you're free to modify and accept the Wagenius as a friendly amendment. We're back on the A46 amendment. Seeing no further discussion, all those in favor of the A46 say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. The A46 is adopted. Members, I had an A39 amendment earlier. That will not be being offered. I have no idea where I came up with that idea, Representative Wagenius. So apologize to Representative Erdahl, to Representative Wagenius, and the other members. We have an A53 amendment. Representative Torkelson, do you want to move the A53 for Representative Erdahl?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move the A53 amendment.
Representative Erdahl, do you want to explain the A53?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This has to do with paying for our reporting system through the LCC, our increased requirements they feel have added to their cost. The $10,000 is being taken from each of the accounts. So it's just an additional $10,000, which we are taking off our bottom line.
Thank you. Discussion to Representative to the Torkelson A53 amendment. All those in favor of the A53 say aye.
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 Opposed, nay. The amendment's adopted. The A49 amendment. Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, members, this is an amendment that expands the language in the Capital Commission that Representative Erdahl has in the bill. I've heard from some folks that they would like to have the commission look more broadly beyond the limited confines of the Capital and the area around it, so that we're sure to have a broader scope for the commission. I understand the Department of Admin is here if people have questions about it.
Questions that I see Commissioner Rhodes coming down, and you've got some other people behind you. Welcome. If you could identify yourself for the records.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm not a commissioner. Jim Rhodes, Department of Administration. Do you have, did you fix the? There's a little problem with the amendment.
Mr. Rhodes, could you ask your question? I missed what you were asking.
Okay.
Mr. Rhodes. Jim
Drozdowski has a technical fix to the amendment. First of all, it gets it in the shape that it's supposed to be. He's got the wrong typo in the section of law.
It is a simple oral amendment. Representative Drazkowski.
It is, Mr. Chair. I forgot about this. Line 1.22, it says 16B.32. It should be 15.15. It's a simple typo. 15B.32 on line 1.22.
Representative Drazkowski on line 1.22 wants to change 16 to 15.
Correct, Mr. Chair.
We'll adopt that oral amendment to the amendment. Mr. Rhodes, to the A49 amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, we just briefly saw this yesterday. We're still working on it. We'll work with the committee and the author of the amendment and the author of the bill as this progresses forward. They may be needing some tweaking here and there. We're not quite sure yet. So we just want to be on record that we'll, you go ahead and put it on if you want to, but we'll have, it's a little bit of a work in progress.
Okay. Discussion to the A49. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. Okay, the A49 is adopted.
Mr. Chairman.
Excuse me. Representative Falk.
Thank you. I actually had a small oral amendment that I was working on yesterday dealing with the capital restoration portion, and I think you may have been absent for that portion, but I worked with Ms. Taylor, and I think we've got some language that's workable if we could just adopt or address this one at this time.
Yeah, why don't we go to that right now? Representative Fall.
It was on the page 11 of, I'm trying to see here, the A30 amendment that dealt with these. Line 7, and hopefully everything still connects with what the Drazkowski Amendment was adopted, but...
Representative Falk, can I ask you, we have three or four other written amendments yet. I'm wondering, do you want to just put it in writing and confirm with Ms. Taylor, and then we can have, or are you at that point already? Representative Falk.
We went through this before.
And okay, so Representative Falk.
On line 7, all we would do is...
What page are you on?
Page 11, line 7. 30. All we would do is, after... after the word access, when referring to citizen access, insert including public access to the Capitol balcony. That would be in this comprehensive plan, that they'd have to look at that as an option as well.
Mr. Rhodes, are you still here? Let's have you come down. Ms. Taylor, and Representative Falk is referring to the A30 amendment, members, so you need to have the A30 in front of you. Ms. Taylor, will you read back Representative Falk's amendment, and then Mr. Rhodes will get your comment.
Mr. Chair, members, the amendment would read, and this is on the A30, as the chair mentioned, on line 11.7, after access, comma, insert, including public access to the Capitol balcony, comma.
Mr. Rhodes, I got to apologize. I've been here for 9 years. I never knew those balconies existed until it came up in committee yesterday, and I walked by yesterday on my way back from floor session to come back here to a meeting here. But Mr. Rhodes, those railings are extremely low, and Representative Falk, well, I like the public access. I had pictures of my granddaughter and looked at those railings. I don't think those railings are even 30 inches high, and there's a ledge to step up on. Mr. Rhodes, do you... I walked by there and got just kind of queasy and thought, oh, my goodness, I can't imagine if we're going to open these doors, I'm going to see a 4-foot orange plastic fence blocking these beautiful granite railings or something. Mr. Rhodes.
Chairman, members of the committee, as often may want to speak to this, but remember, this is the pigeon issue also. We talked about that yesterday. But there's a little bit more to it than just that. First of all, I think it gets a little prescriptive in the bill for what the commission should and shouldn't be doing before they've even had their first meeting. So we want to talk about that. Mr. Waslowski, our director of real estate construction services, can probably be a little more.
Mr. Rhodes, let me just first, if I'm going to try and keep it relatively simple. Representative Erdahl.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I was just going to suggest perhaps if we had enough bungee cords around the balcony, it would work.
Representative Falk, I want to give you some flexibility here, but I got to be honest. I was really nervous when I walked by and saw that. I mean, it was beautiful in that, but it's up on the second floor of the Capitol with granite steps below. Representative Falk.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I that's why we're putting this in the part where we're talking about in developing the pre-design, that's one of the things that must be considered, take into account, is what the language reads. And so we're not saying that you have to open, but you have to take into account, because previously when we talked about this, it was more prescriptive, so we're trying to allow additional flexibility here that at least we want to have that as something that's considered. So I don't think that is being too narrowly focused. I think that's a very broad focus, and that's what we get from this report, but we're making sure that the report encompasses that type of information.
If you could identify yourself for the record and keep your testimony short.
Mr. Chair, members, I'm the Director of Real Estate and Construction Services. My name is Wayne Waslowski with the Department of Administration. I would just suggest that this would involve fairly significant alterations to the building, including to some of the historic elements to the building, and that's just an initial. I think your visceral reaction to it is you'd know that we'd have to make some changes to the building to accommodate this. And I think it potentially could impact some of the historic features of the building. So I would just, on the surface, express concerns. I do get the point that what the amendment would do would be to ask us to, as part of the commission, to consider this. I just caution that I think there's some real hurdles to making this happen, including from a liability and safety standpoint.
Representative Paul.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, Mr. Chair, that's the purpose of including it, so we can understand what those hurdles would be. And, I mean, we can all speculate here, but until we have that in front of us as far as part of the report, and maybe it is not an appropriate course of action, but at least want to have that discussion. So I don't think that this would add a huge amount of burden, but I want to make sure that it is part of the discussion.
Representative Canute.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I would just echo Representative Folt's thing. We're talking with kind of half information and speculation, and while I looked at that, and I know you, the testifier knows a lot more than all of us, but I think as legislators who use the building, and I think one of the best parts of the Capitol is that it's a beautiful public building that's the people's house, and I think taking that into consideration in all aspects is really important, and it seems like now is a reasonable time to actually get good information. You know, I hear talk about the days when you could go out on the balcony and how great that was, but I think it would be useful to understand the trade-offs that we would have to be considering and having that part of the Capitol open to the public.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
To Representative Falk's oral amendment.
Real. Stand around here. Wait your time.
Representative Erdahl, we have had a very organized professional committee, and it is falling apart in the last 3 days. Representative Erdahl.
Just real quickly, going back, and I never thought I'd be doing this 2 days in a row, but my example yesterday of the Litchfield Opera House. The balcony is very, very low, and when actually it was Representative Dean who was there, looked up and said, you know, the ADA that Representative Purcell talked about would not fit under that code because of the low balcony, and the low balcony is the same problem that we have with the Capitol, and to change it, there would be, I think, significant changes that I don't think would be very aesthetically pleasing because of the balcony. So I think
Representative Beard. Well,
Mr. Chair, I'm partial to the information that could be gathered because when Representative Falk first brought this up, I thought he was talking about the little circular balcony inside the dome. And I've been on that balcony, and that does give you the willies when you're standing there. But I've also been on the roof up by the Quadriga, where I think we have the same kind of structure, if I'm not mistaken. But I'd like to know a little more about that. So I don't mean to get crossways with Representative Erdahl here, but I don't see the problem with adopting the amendment and learning what the specifications are.
Well, I understand where you're coming from, Representative Beard, Representative Falk. I got to be honest, I see no way you can let the public out there, the public, because this is so, under today's standards, would just be anybody that's a parent or a grandparent would freak out if the public was, and these are the granite huge pillars and such. I guess I don't have a problem with you looking at it, but I'm sorry, I kind of know what you're going to come back with. You're going to have to lengthen the granite pillars by a length, and I know that Elena's head would fit between there potentially, or some little babies would. And so, Representative, we're going to move on, but Representative Torkels.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't see much point in trying to do the Capital Preservation Commission work before they have a chance to do the work themselves. I would urge you to move on.
Representative Deal.
I just don't want to volunteer to do my part in this, and that I would schedule my annual shooting event at that location in Ooh. Future years to take care of the pigeon problem.
Well, I thought we were okay. Members, to the Falk Amendment, any further discussion to the Falk Amendment? All those in favor of the Falk Amendment say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay.
Nay.
The motions the amendments adopted. Next, we have this one's all right. You know how to do it now. Representative Wagenius to the A52.
This amendment just asks the Lessard Sam's Council to let us know how many acres of native prairie have been protected and how many have been restored. It's just a little bit of additional accountability going along with Representative Erdahl's accountability, additional accountability language. It adds, it does two other things. It adds the word grasslands into the title, since we want to be honest with Minnesotans. And the last thing on 121, it deletes a 5 in the deletion part of the bill, which brings back the definition of native prairie.
Representative Wagenius, let's confirm with Ms. Taylor, because those repealers were my addition, and I did not intend to repeal the definition of native prairie. Ms. Taylor, to the repealer, if you could clarify what we're going to put back in.
Sure. Mr. Chair and members, the repealer, as Representative Wagenius mentioned, just would restore the definition of native prairie. And if members wanted to see what that was, they could go to the last page of the bill in their packets, and you'll see the language that's being repealed on page 1R.
Member, I support the Wagenius Amendment. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. I'm sorry. Opposed, nay. The amendment's adopted.
Thank you, Mr.
Let's see,
Chairman.
And I misspoke again, and I think it's contagious from Representative Erdahl, but the A39 was Representative Drazkowski's amendment. We had earlier, Representative Drazkowski, I was thinking it was one of mine, then I thought it was a different one. It is your amendment, members. It was one I said I would not be offering, but it was Representative Drazkowski's amendment. To the A39, Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Oh,
that was not yours. It was the A49.
It was A49.
Well, 4-3. Sorry.
I'm trying to figure it out and see if I can speak to it.
The A39 is back in recycling, members. Okay. No one else is claiming the A39, correct? Okay. Representative Hansen to the A54, and it's going to be passed out. Why don't you explain the A54? Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and after this one, I have a couple oral ones that I couldn't get drafted, if I have your indulgence. But on A54, in the governor's budget, he proposed $3 million for inflow infiltration grants to the Met Council. This is, Representative Kwan, this is a competitive grant process that's matching. I think that I know that we're not going to get $3 million each year, but I do know there's more than $3 million on the bottom line in the Clean Water Fund, and so I am proposing half of that to go to competitive grants that are matching grants. And I'm using the governor's budget language for matching grants to private parties. This provides groundwater protection. I think when you look at the clean water portion of the bill, it's a little light on groundwater protection. So I would move this amendment and ask for a roll call.
Roll call has been requested. There will be a roll call. Representative Torkelson, this is from the clean water section of the bill, which you're the chief author of. Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hansen referred to the cushion on the bottom line. It's actually already lower than the cushion that was provided for in the last biennium. I don't feel it's fiscally responsible to reduce that cushion to a point where it threatens the cash flow. Therefore, I would ask members to vote against this amendment.
Representative Beard.
I'm curious to know from Representative Hansen who the private parties are he has in mind he refers to on 1.6.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Beard, these would be individual homeowners. The grants go to the cities. There's a competitive grant process that they the inflow infiltration is the sewer line connection from the home to the public property. And so we have in the past provided money for the cities for the public portion of this. This is for cost share for that cost for individual homeowners. So it's not a company, it's residential. This is a problem throughout the 7-county metro area, and the Met Council has a system. They have been distributing grants out for this in the past with some fee dollars, not general fund dollars. It was dollars that they had that disappeared. So this, I don't believe there's a problem with supplanting either because it was not an appropriation. We have additional dollars in bonding that are there. This is for the private portion.
additional discussion to the A54? The clerk will call the roll.
McNamara?
No.
Anderson?
No.
Beard?
Nay.
Dill?
Aye.
Drazkowski?
No.
Fabian?
No.
Falk?
Aye.
Hackbarth?
No.
Hancock?
Nay.
Hansen?
Yes.
Hilty?
Yes.
Knuth?
Yes.
Purcell?
Yes.
Quam?
Nay.
Scott?
No.
Torkelson?
No.
Wagenius?
Yes.
There being 7 ayes and 10 nays, the amendment is not adopted. Representative Erdahl, do you want to go rural or metro first? Representative Knuth to the
go metro.
Thank you, Representative Erdahl. To the A43 amendment. Representative Knuth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The A43 amendment restores the parks funding to Representative McFarland had in a bill and for the metro, and then also what the governor's recs were. It's still less than it was in the last biennium, but more than the current bill. And it would basically restore it to 42% for the, it'd be 42-42-16. And, you know, we're always, I think, going to be arguing a little bit about the distribution of this money, but I think the metro area parks are heavily used, more heavily used than any other parks in any system in our state. And part of it is, you know, the land is more expensive. There's more people there. They do take a significant amount of money to maintain. They have a great long-term plan. And so I think to have metro parks reduced by $600,000 from last biennium to this biennium is not the direction we should be going. So I would propose the A43 amendment, Mr. Chair, and I know time is short, but I think there's some people who've been waiting a while to talk about this amendment and would like to give some testimony.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Ms. Chair, and my comments basically on this are, you know, what I made yesterday. There are fine arguments on both sides, and each side will make their case very well. Representative Knuth has, and I'm sure that Representative Falk, basically on the other side, will also make some great points. But the position that we have struck at 40-40-20 is the one that I believe is the most workable and that we should stay with. And I do appreciate that there are people on both sides who wish to testify with this. And anxious to hear them, but I would also encourage them to please keep their remarks short in light of our time constraints here.
Thank you, Representative Erdahl. Representative Knuth, and what, as far as testimony, do you have any idea how many folks are interested in testifying? We do actually are able to stay in this room, but I know if we're going to be having votes here, it would be nice to wrap up by 10 if we could. But
Mr. Chair, I think it's just one or two is my understanding.
Thank you. Well, whoever wants to testify for or against, why don't we take testifiers for Representative Knuth's bill first. Representative Wagenius.
I would like to speak on this too, but after the testifiers, but in the meantime,
Representative Wagenius, can you pull it down or speak into it? Thank you.
As the folks are coming down, if I could have a page hand this out, it's for me and it doesn't have my name on it. That's why I wanted to let people know. It talks about park usage in the metro, and I would like to talk about that for a moment.
You want to take testimony first, Representative Wagenius?
Yes.
Okay. If you could identify yourself for the record and who you represent. Your testimony will be limited to 2 minutes, folks, as you decide to testify.
Mr. Chair and members, for the record, my name is Arnie Stefford. I'm a planning analyst in the Parks Program. I do have a handout, if the pages could distribute it. that deals with the A43 amendment and also in relationship to the bill that...
Excuse me again, sir. You're a park analyst?
Park analyst with the Metropolitan Council. With the Metropolitan Council, yes.
Thank you.
Yes, I'm sorry. The handout analyzes the distribution of the Parks and Trails Legacy Fund money between Greater Minnesota and the metropolitan area based upon working in partnership with the DNR as to how the statewide grants program may be distributed, looking at what's been submitted for applications. 80% of the requests for the statewide grants is from Greater Minnesota, 20% from the metro area. I'm making the assumption that that is how the money would be dispersed. But within this spreadsheet, under the A43 amendment, and looking at how the money is projected to be dispersed, 49.8% would be spent in Greater Minnesota, 50.2% in the Twin Cities metro area. Representative Erdahl's bill, which is the next column over, 52% would be spent in Greater Minnesota, 47.8% in the metro area. And therefore, as Representative Knuth's point, the A43 amendment is a little more balanced in regards to disbursement of the funds between the Twin Cities metro area and Greater Minnesota. So that's my testimony.
Thank you. Questions for the testifier? Additional testimony? Anybody else? Additional testimony? Representative Knuth, do you want to renew your motion?
Can I?
Oh, I'm sorry. Mr. Bullock.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, for the record, Forrest Bowe, Deputy Director of the Parks and Trails Division of DNR. The department supports the governor's recommendation, and the recommendation, of course, implements key elements of the Park and Trail Legacy Plan that was just unveiled here in January. There's a strong connection, a strong relationship between the governor's recommendation and the budget proposal. In other words, we're implementing the four pillars that are in the plan: connecting people to the outdoors, acquiring land, creating opportunities, taking care of what we have, and working better together. We've all inherited a park and trail legacy here in Minnesota, and the citizens recognize that too when they participated in the development of the plan. We've got legislatively authorized 26 state trails. About half of those are completed. We have 74 state park and rec areas. We have 54 state forest campgrounds, over 5,000 campsites, 300 bridges. Over 100 of them are over 100 years old. We've got 1,600 buildings in our state park and recreation system. And so I guess what I'm trying to provide an example here is that we have an extensive system, and this particular proposal will forward and protect that system, take care of it, and meet the needs of the system. We did make an effort to put additional dollars into the grant program. We had identified a 39% increase going to the grant program. The DNR and Metro Parks increase was 15% over the previous biennium. There was an effort to do that. We gave out about $8.5 million worth of grants over the last 2 years, 80% of which went to the outstate area, 20% went to the Metro. And we have done a grant solicitation for the 2012 already. There is about $19 million worth of requests. Again, about 80% of those requests were coming from the outstate area.
Questions for Director Bowe? To Director Bowe, Representative Knuth. Representative Wagenius.
Yes, members, one of the things I handed out was something that we had received in Legacy Committee, and it talks about the most visited metro regional parks and trails. And it compares it with the most visited state parks and Greater Minnesota parks. And what caught my eye was the huge numbers, and especially since I had never seen this before, number five on there is Nokomis Hiawatha Regional Park. That's in my district. Tiny park, relatively speaking, with a huge number of visitors. And I had known that it's congested, but I didn't know how it ranked. And I would hope, as we think about all of this, parks, it's not acreage alone that we think about. It's where people are using them. And obviously, all the people coming into my district are not folks who live there. It's people coming from all over because it's just in a particularly attractive place to go running and walking and biking and all those kinds of other things.
Representative Canute.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm not sure if there's another testifier. I didn't have a question for Mr. Bowe, but I'd like a roll call on this
amendment. Roll call has been requested. There will be a roll call. Representative Canute.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think just a final comment. You know, I think when you're looking at usage, when you're looking at long-term plans, when you're looking at a whole bunch of different measures, I think the Metro Parks should be on par with the rest of the state. And I think clearly people in the Metro use the state parks. I think clearly people in outstate Minnesota use our state parks as well. I think they're a statewide asset. And I also think people outstate probably come into the city and use our regional parks as well. And so I think maintaining this balance between or among all of our different park systems is really important. And I'd like to, I hope members can support my amendment.
Thank you. Is there additional testifiers? Does anybody else want to? Okay, we have all the. Come ahead, sir, if you couldn't identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Chairman and committee members. My name is Al Liefert, and I represent the Greater Minnesota Parks and Trails Coalition. My testimony today is on this amendment has to do with that Greater Minnesota Parks and Trails supports the Legacy Plan's connection to connect people to the outdoors. To paraphrase the old biblical statement, if the park won't come to the people, then you must bring the people to the park. The Bill 1061, as written, supports higher levels of funding to the non-state program. That is a program that we desperately need in Greater Minnesota.
Thank you. Questions for the testifier? Additional comments? Representative Erdahl, I know you've worked real hard to try and find a balance, and I'm going to respect your balance and not support either one of the amendments. I'm assuming, Representative Erdahl, this one is more money for the Metro, and will Representative Faulks go in the opposite direction?
Essentially, yes. This money takes more money out of the grant program, and Representative Faulks puts more money into the grant program.
And Representative Erdahl, let me ask you, are you supporting Representative Knut's amendment?
No, I'm not, and I also will not be supporting Representative Faulks' amendment.
Okay, thank you. That's good for us to know. Clerk will call the roll.
McNamara?
No.
Anderson?
No.
Beard? Dill?
No.
Druskowski?
No.
Fabian?
No.
Falk?
No.
Hackbarth?
Aye.
Hancock?
No.
Hansen?
Yes.
Hilty?
Aye.
Knuth?
Yes.
Purcell?
No.
Quam?
No.
Scott? Torkelson?
No.
Wagenius.
There being five ayes and 10 nays, one abstention, the amendment is not adopted. Representative Fall to the 848 amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I can look at this as kind of an issue where I'm able to do the math very easily on We've got basically three different areas. We've got urban, suburban, and rural parks, and I think a very fair way to divide up these resources is in a third, a third, a third. This is done as close as possible. I worked with Ms. Taylor. The numbers are off on the one ever so slightly because it takes into account, I think, one of the provisions for one of the parks that was already identified in the bill. Maybe Ms. Taylor could help explain that a little bit. But it, essentially, this is a third, a third, a third. Third rural parks, third suburban, third urban.
Thank you, Representative Falk. Ms. Taylor, to the clarification.
Mr. Chair and members, what the Falk Amendment would do, and this follows the pattern of what's in the bill currently, is there's the $2.1 million set aside for the LaSalle Lake State Park or Rec Area. That's been taken off the top, as well as a $38,000 for evaluations. Those have been taken off the top, and then the third, third, third split has been calculated.
Thank you. Representative Falk.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so this is just an area where, I mean, we understand that there's utilization in the cities. There's also a lot more people in the cities. But wherever you live in the state, you should have access to recreation areas. You should have access to quality-funded parks. And so this is just a very simple amendment that I think makes the process much more fair and really does reflect the nature of the state. And we want to make sure that people who are in all four corners of the state or anywhere in between have access to parks. And with this, I would request a roll call.
Okay, roll call has been requested.
And I'm not sure if anybody here would like to speak on behalf. There was a member from the rural parks that may want to offer support for this amendment, or anybody else from the audience might want to speak to it. I'm not sure, but that was brought up earlier.
Additional discussion to the 848 amendment. Representative Verdahl, we're going to be in recess to the call of the chair. Reconvene the Environment, Energy, Natural Resources Committee. Clerk will call the roll. Before us is the 848 amendment, Representative Falk's amendment. Clerk will call the roll.
McNamara?
No.
Anderson?
Yes.
Beard? Dill?
No.
Ruskowski?
No.
Fabian?
No.
Falk?
Yes.
Hackbarth?
No.
Hancock?
No.
Hansen?
No.
Hilty?
Pass.
Knuth?
No.
Purcell?
Yes.
Quam?
Yes.
Scott?
No.
Torkelson?
Yes.
Wagenius?
No.
There being five ayes and ten nays, the amendment is not adopted. Representative Hansen, to your oral amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On page 9, lines 9.7 through 9.14.
Representative Hansen, to the bill or to the A30?
To the bill.
To the bill.
Page 9 of the bill. I don't know if Mr. Becker is still here, but my amendment is to remove lines 9.17 through 9.14 and add, and I'm not sure the exact way to...
Excuse me, Representative Hansen, could you repeat again your deletion?
I would be deleting lines 9.7 to 9.14 and then on line 9.33 after the comma, after the 3, deleting the three zeros and adding 604.
Ms. Taylor, I'll just repeat Representative Hansen's amendment. It's to delete the Project F, Protect Key Forest Habitat Lands in Cass County, line 9.7 through 9.14. Take that $604,000, move it down to line 9.33 in the RIM program. Director Becker.
Mr. Chair,
This would substantially change the council's recommendations. The deletion on lines 9.7 through 9.4 delete the second funding of an innovative program to provide access to public lands in Cass County and better manage development in Cass County.
Additional discussion to the Hansen Oral Amendment. Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'd have to ask for a no vote on that amendment. This Cass County is in my district here, and they have some real good programs going in this regard, and ask for a no vote.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to the amendment. Mr. Becker, the Cass County program, my understanding of the program is that we take the legacy sales tax dollars, we give them to Cass County. Cass County uses them to buy property from large multinational timber companies. They buy the land, then they log or manage the land, perhaps selling those trees back to the large multinational timber companies. So the purpose here is to be swapping land for county land management. I think in the testimony over the prior years, there wasn't any endangered species. There wasn't a unique or feature here. This was land swapping that was supposed to be to provide access, but actually in some of the properties, it was in holdings, not providing access. Has anything changed, or is that description not quite accurate?
Mr. Director Becker.
Representative Hansen, that's not how I understand the program. I understand the priorities to be on the basis of access to lands that otherwise that are publicly owned lands that need management that otherwise can't get management because of intervening private ownership.
Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Becker, was one of the properties in the last in this, was it an in-holding owned by Potlatch and not an adjacent that would allow for access?
Director Becker.
Mr. Chair, I don't recall.
Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chair, last week you had introduced a bill for reinvest in Minnesota wetlands bonding. Yesterday, the Capital Investment Committee met and had an emergency bonding bill. It has no RIM money. And according to the chair, the $45 million that are there includes no RIM money. And so I believe that there are higher priorities than facilitating a corporate land swap in Cass County. I appreciate Representative Purcell's interest in this, but I think with limited funds that are there, it is a higher and a better use of the fund for wetland reserve protection.
Thank you for those comments. Representative Wagenius.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You did have that wetlands bonding bill, which I support. It's my understanding that there is a very large amount of federal matching dollars available for wetlands right now, and that we are not sure how long that will last. Can somebody remind me of the matching dollars on that?
Representative Wagenius, I believe it's 1.6, the match. For $1 of state money, it's 1.6 of federal money. And I'm not sure, Representative Wagenius, but a number of us around the table here are co-authors of that bill. Representative Wagenius.
Mr. Chair, this amendment, of course, brings in extra federal dollars. And I have on the record say I am extraordinarily disappointed that your bill has not moved forward. It provides us a huge opportunity for flood prevention as well as job creation.
Well, Representative Wagenius, the bill was just introduced, I believe, last week, and we are, many of us at the table, again, lobbying hard for that bill. And while it's not included in Representative Howell's emergency flood bonding bill, I'm going to work hard to be sure that we do our best efforts to get it included in whatever bonding bill ends up. All those in favor of the Hansen oral amendment say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay.
No.
The amendment is not adopted.
Representative Hansen, you have another oral amendment.
One more.
Then Representative Erdahl, I know you have an oral amendment too. Representative Hansen.
What? Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this would be on page 34.
Of the bill again.
Of the bill. And I would move to strike on line 34.25 the word research and a comma. And then on lines 34.28, strike and more precise information. And I think on, and then the that might have to be replaced with the word for.
Representative Hansen moves on page 34 of the bill, line 25, to delete the word research, and on line 28, again of page 34, delete the rest of the line after the word practices and insert the word for. Representative Torkelson, I believe this is part of the bill that you authored.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was not aware of this potential change. It does, as I understand it, just allows less flexibility to the Department of Agriculture in administering this portion of the grant program, and I would urge members to vote no.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Would maybe Representative Torkelson yield to a question?
Representative Hansen.
Representative Torkelson, I'm looking at the constitutional amendment language. And it says that 33% of the receipts shall be deposited in the Clean Water Fund and may be spent only to protect, enhance, and restore water quality in lakes, rivers, and streams, and to protect groundwater from degradation. And I look in the section that I'm amending, and I look in the section after that, and the section after that, and I see research, research, research. And I'd like to know, since in the other funds there's been a strong prohibition against research in the Outdoor Heritage Fund, how research is going to protect, enhance, and restore water quality in lakes, rivers, and streams, and protect groundwater from degradation.
Excuse me, Representative Torkelson, just so members know, we are in a, if there's anyone in the audience that's here for state gov ops, they're in 300. GovOps, I'm sorry, in 300 South. I've seen a few people wander in that don't look. If you're looking for the Government Operations Committee, they're in 300 South. Ladies that just wandered in, are you looking for the GovOps Committee? You're not. Okay, thank you. To Representative Hansen's question. Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Hansen. You know, using these dollars wisely means that we have to have good science behind them, and a limited amount of research to me seems appropriate use of the dollars. We're not restricted in this case to only research.
Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chair, so protect, restore, and enhance would include research then. Is that what you're saying, Representative Torkelson?
Representative Torkelson.
If the research allows us to use these dollars more effectively and it's directly related to the projects that are anticipated, yes.
Representative Wagenius.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I am going to disagree with my colleague, Representative Hansen, and say that I agree with Representative Torkelson here. Research is, don't faint, Representative Torkelson. I think these dollars, if we guide us to doing the right thing instead of spending money the way we've always spent it and getting no results, is the smart way to go. What concerns me is that in some of the other parts of this language, we are saying money goes to best management practices when we don't know whether those best management practices actually work. So I think the research part is probably the most important part of this particular bill.
Representative Jaskowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, members, I support Representative Hansen's amendment. Members, again, to be piling more money into research, we had a $750,000 research project that was reported to us at first item of business. I believe that we are here this session, and, you know, it was one of many I've seen in the last several years. The folks who work in agriculture have a deep amount of research in these areas. Really where the deficiencies are is in the resources and efforts around implementation. So we got to get this money, folks, out to do the things that this money needs to do on the land in Minnesota. And Representative Hansen, you're precisely right. Thank you.
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Representative Jaskowski, for those remarks. I share your sympathy and I share your viewpoint, but at the same time, to limit research and not allow us to really discover the best way to use these dollars is also not appropriate. We're trying to find a balance here. I believe the balance should lean towards more activity and more projects on the ground, but still, when the need for research arises, we do need to fund it.
Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I just want to offer my agreement to the amendment. I believe in the language here, and nobody believes in research stronger than me, but we also have pilot projects in here. You're doing a pilot project, you're learning from it. That's what you're supposed to do. That in itself can be determined to be research. So I think there's some redundancy there. We need to stay on the learning curve, but let's do some things on the ground.
Representative Wagenius, I might have skipped you by accident. Representative Wagenius, or did you get to speak?
Well, members, I think it would be appropriate. I need to just address Representative Jaskowski. There will be a study coming up from the Pollution Control Agency, and this is just a testing of the Minnesota River, which was tested in the early, 1989 to 1992, it was tested, and the biology of the river was tested, and of course that's the appropriate testing to see if the river is healthy. And we had a little bit of interim testing, but we didn't have testing again until last year. And so the river was tested again in the same way it was tested in 1989 to 1992. And what the test will show, and the report will come out in days if it hasn't already come out, is that there's been virtually no change in the river. Fish are a little bit better, but the invertebrate are a little bit worse. And maybe that would not be important, but for one thing, we have spent $1 billion in that river valley trying to clean up the river. The federal government has put in, I think, almost another $1 billion. To keep on doing what we've been doing and hoping it will get better is not smart. Representative Torkelson is right here. We need to know better what we are doing, because doing what we've been doing and doing more of it is not a problem solver.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to the issue, if I'm only affecting the $700,000 the first year, $700,000 the second year. If you look after that, there's $2.1 million for research, and then another $500,000 for a research inventory. So the appropriation that I'm affecting, kind of following up on what Representative Purcell said, it has pilot projects and technical assistance for proper implementation. So it's to get out to the landowners and implement, not to study anymore. So I'm not changing all the research. I do think that there is inconsistency in how research is handled between the funds, because if the words protect, enhance, and restore do not include research in one fund, and they are okay for research in the other fund, they're the same words. They're the same words.
We have a testifier. If you could keep it real short, we're trying to get a vote here.
Mr. Chair, for the record, my name is Dan Stoddard. I'm with the Minnesota Department of Agriculture.
And I think it's important that the members understand that those three concepts are linked together: research, pilot projects, and technical assistance. This funding is for projects such as Discovery Farms, and we have some tile demonstration projects, and they achieve multiple purposes at one time. Their specific goal is to evaluate BMPs, but they also promote the BMPs and get information on how to adopt the BMPs into the hands of farmers. And so I think it's really important. They're not traditional research projects. We're not just doing research. It's a number of activities that are rolled into one. There's certainly a major implementation component to this aspect.
Thank you. All those in favor of the Hansen Amendment say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay.
Nay.
The amendment is not adopted.
Division.
Division being requested. All those in favor of the Hansen Amendment, raise your hand. And those opposed? The amendment is adopted. I think it was 8-6. The chair hasn't had to test his ears very much, and my wife knows I need hearing aids. So the Hansen Amendment is adopted. I think we're on the bill, members. Any further discussion for the bill? Representative Knute.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I missed some of the discussion yesterday because I was in another committee. But on the A47 amendment, which amended the A30 amendment, which was a very significant change, and you know, our committee is not as informed on the cultural issues in this bill because not so many members serve on Representative Erdahl's committee. And I've had some conversations with the Minnesota Humanities Center and some of their concerns about the criteria language. And they have some language, and I don't necessarily want to amend it here, but I would hope Representative Erdahl would be willing to work with them as this bill moves along and incorporate some of their concerns into that language.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Knuth. And thank you for bringing that up. I have been in conversation this morning with Mr. O'Fallon. And if we could have moved some language this morning, we would, but there are a couple of questions that we have to clear up, and once we get that cleared up, we'll move on that as we go along.
I renew my motion that House File 1061 be passed and onto the as amended to the Tax Committee. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay.
Nay.
The bill is passed and on to taxes. Members, we do not have a plan to be here tomorrow. The conference committee will meet tomorrow afternoon, I believe, 12:30 at Capitol 15. You will have to check the website for the room. Representative Dill, could you move the minutes of May 3rd? Representative Dill moves the minutes of May 3rd. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. The minutes are adopted. Members will stand by for meetings next week as needed.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.